Picking up here in Romans chapter 9, Paul starts off explaining how that, you know, if all the rest of the Jews could be born again, by me giving up my salvation, I'd do it. And he said, my concern is so deep for them. You know, they're the Israelites, to whom pertaineth the adoption, and the glory, and the covenants, and the giving of the law, and the service, and the promises, whose fathers, whose are the fathers, and of whom, concerning the flesh, Christ came who is over all, God blessed forever. Amen. So he's saying, look, here are all these things that have happened in their history. And the reason he's giving all of these examples was because he was saying that all of these things that took place, they were all working together as a path pointing in the direction of Jesus, or leading people in the direction of Jesus. If you look in Colossians chapter 2, Colossians chapter 2, what Paul is saying here concerning the law, he says, verse 16, let no man therefore judge you in meat, or in drink, or in respect of a holy day, or of the new moon, or of the Sabbath, which are a shadow of things to come, but the body is of Christ. And then in Hebrews chapter 9, look over there. Hebrews chapter 9 is basically talking about the same thing as far as, you know, all of the stuff that's happened to them throughout the years, all the things that he's mentioned there in Romans chapter 9. In Hebrews 9, verses 9 through 10, he says, speaking of the tabernacle and the service at the altar and so forth, which was a figure for the time then present, in which were offered both gifts and sacrifices that could not make him that did the service perfect as pertaining to the conscience, which stood only in meats and drinks and divers washings and carnal ordinances imposed on them until the time of reformation. We've talked about this before. This time of reformation means when the law is done away with, or there is a reforming of the way man can have a relationship with God. He said all these things were only temporary, leading up to this time of reformation. Well, if you go back to Romans chapter 9, and this goes right along with what we said. In fact, why don't, turn over to Galatians 4. Let me show you this. Galatians chapter 4. Where he says in verse 24, wherefore the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ, that we might be justified by faith. But after that faith is come, or a better way to put that, after Jesus has come and completed his work on the earth, we are no longer under a schoolmaster. What was the schoolmaster? He just told you, the law. For you are all the children of God by faith in Christ Jesus. And so Paul was saying, you know, we're Israelites. We had a covenant. We're children of the covenant. And that covenant was pointing us in the direction of Jesus. The adoption, the whole working of the adoption, the whole working of the glory that God revealed, the covenants. I mean, all of these things that God gave, even the way that God worked through the fathers, all through the years, all through the centuries, over and over again, God was working through all of these things to bring us to this point when Jesus would come to the earth. In other words, it's almost like he's saying, you know what? God did all of this, but they rejected the goal when the goal finally got here. When God finally got Jesus into the picture, when he finally got Jesus here on earth, the Jews rejected him. After all of these centuries of God saying, he's coming, he's going to be here, here's an example, here's a type and shadow, he's coming, the one that's promised, he's going to be here, he's going to arrive on the scene. And then when he gets here, the only thing they had to do is believe. And they wouldn't even do that. God spent all those years trying to prepare the Jews for the arrival of Jesus, but they refused to do their part, which was to believe what God had said. But now look what he says here in verse 6, Romans 9, verse 6. Not as though the word of God had taken none effect, for they are not all Israel, which are of Israel. Neither because they are the seed of Abraham are they all children, but in Isaac shall thy seed be called. That is, they which are the children of Israel, or children of the flesh, these are not the children of God, but the children of the promise are counted for the seed. He says up in verse 6, Look, after all of what I've just shared, I've poured out my heart. And it's like I'm reminding the Jews, all of these things happened for one reason, to point us in the direction of Jesus Christ. Repeatedly, God throughout was giving us not just demonstrations, but He also gave us words through prophets and so forth. And He says, but you know what? Even though the Jews, for the most part, have rejected, it isn't that God wasted His time. In other words, not as though the Word of God hath taken none effect. There are some people who have responded. There are even Jews. There are those who did respond. Look in Romans chapter 2. He says, "For here in chapter 9, verse 6, for they are not all Israel, which are of Israel." In Romans chapter 2, look at verses 28 and 29, because this is part of what he's talking about. "For he is not a Jew, which is one outwardly, neither is that circumcision which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew, which is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart in the spirit, and not in the letter, whose praise is not of men, but of God." Now remember, throughout the Old Testament, God had prophesied the day was coming when there's going to be a change in covenant. The day is coming when the stony heart's going to be removed, and the fleshy heart is going to be put there in its place, and I'll write my laws in the heart and put them in the mind, and so on and so forth. And in Romans chapter 4, verses 12 and through 13, talking about Abraham, how that he's the father of circumcision to them who are not of the circumcision only, but who also walk in the steps of that faith of our father Abraham, which he had being yet uncircumcised. For the promise that he should be the heir of the world was not to Abraham or to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith. And then look over in 1 Peter chapter 2. Because this all ties into what he's saying here in Romans chapter 9. 1 Peter chapter 2. Look at verse 7. It says, "Unto you therefore which believe, he is precious," speaking of Jesus. "But unto them which be disobedient, the stone which the builders disallowed, the same is made the head of the corner." Now, in verse 7, when he says, "Unto you therefore which believe, he is precious, but unto them which be disobedient, the stone which the builders disallowed, the same is made the head of the corner." Now, we're going to get into this thing of the cornerstone later on tonight. But he's speaking first off to the Jews. And then second, the Gentiles would be included in this. He says, to them which be obedient, to those which believe, to those who accept, to those who receive, he said, he is precious. Now, what was it they were believing? Well, if we use what Paul was talking about, the types and the shadows, they accepted what God had been prophesying all these years, and they recognized that Jesus is the Christ. And he says that Jesus, verse 8, is a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense, even to them which stumble at the word, being disobedient, whereunto also they were appointed. But ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that ye should show forth the praises of him who hath called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but now are the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Okay, now think about this, because this is going to help you understand more about what he's saying in Romans chapter 9. Here in 1 Peter chapter 2, he's talking about, look, Jew or Gentile, the thing is, when you responded to the message of the gospel, when you responded to the preaching of Jesus and you accepted him and you were born again, he became precious unto you. And now, because of that, you've experienced an internal change, a spiritual change, which has caused you to be the offspring of God. You are a generation of people that had never existed. You are a race, a nation of people that had never existed, because never before, until Jesus was brought on, after Adam fell, until Jesus came on the earth, there was no one who was the offspring of God. There was no one that had his life and had his nature. Well, then after he completed his work, it became possible for people to be adopted into God's family, having a complete change of nature. And he says, now look at this, in verse 10, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. Okay, now wait a minute. Don't we see in the Old Testament God extending mercy? So how can he say that they had not, as he puts it here, had not obtained mercy, but now they've obtained mercy? How can he say that? Because we see in the Old Testament where God extended mercy to people. Here's the thing. God extended mercy in place of judgment. Because the ultimate mercy of God is for your sin nature to be wiped out and God's nature to replace it on the inside. That is the ultimate demonstration of mercy. And the only way that you could possibly obtain that kind of mercy is if Jesus were to come to the earth and complete His work. And so what Peter is writing about, and remember, Peter was a Jew. He understood these things. What Peter is writing about here, he's saying, listen, the whole time that we were here on earth, all of us, the nation of the Jews, that entire race, over and over again, we thought we were, you know, grand recipients of God's mercy, when in reality, it was, yeah, a type of mercy, but it wasn't the greatest mercy that He wanted to bestow upon us. We had never, in keeping the law and the ordinances, we had never obtained the mercy that God truly wanted to impart to us, which was to be born again, to become a part of His generation, His race, His people, His children. This is where God wanted us the whole time. And the only reason that we had the opportunity to be partakers of that mercy is because God withheld judgment for sin over and over and over again. Remember, I didn't write this down, but there's a place in the Old Testament where God says, I'm looking for a man to stand in the gap, to intercede, so that judgment will be avoided. And He says, but I can't find anybody. I can't find one person who's willing to stand up and intercede on behalf so that my mercy can be extended through their intercession and that judgment can be avoided. So I guess the judgment's going to be poured out. Well, going back over to Romans chapter 9. When Paul starts off writing in verse 6, after going through all of this and saying, you know, the Jews over and over, you know, God presented Himself and He presented Jesus and He showed Jesus unto them through the types and the shadows and through the law. And, I mean, the covenants, the promises, all of these things, He kept revealing His plan. And yet when the plan came to fruition, they rejected it. But in verse 6, not everybody has rejected the word. The word wasn't given in vain. Not everybody has rejected what He has offered. Now, in this verse 6, and this is very important, what He is presenting here is choice. He's presenting the ability of the individual to choose to accept or to reject the word that God has given. Now, this is very vital in understanding more of what He's going to write here in chapter 9. And He says here in verse 7, neither because, after He says, they're not all Israel which are of Israel, neither because they are the children or the seed of Abraham are they all children, but in Isaac shall thy seed be called. Being a descendant of Abraham didn't qualify a person to be God's child. You had to be after the pattern of Isaac, or an Isaac person, so to speak. It was Isaac, not Ishmael, who was the child of promise. Ishmael, if you remember what happened, that whole story, Abraham and Hagar and so forth, you know, they tried to bring about a child their own way. In other words, Ishmael is a product of works. Ishmael is a product of man's efforts. In other words, it's man trying to do what he can by his own strength to bring about a manifestation of God's perfect will. And He's saying, look, what He's really trying to do in here is draw a comparison. When He says that, but in Isaac shall thy seed be blessed, here's what He's telling them. He's saying, listen, through your works, what works? Works of the law. You will never obtain the fullness of God's promise in your life. What promise? The promise of salvation, the promise of a new heart, the promise of the Messiah, receiving the Messiah into your life. He says, through your own works, you'll never be able to do this, to attain to the promise of righteousness. It will never become manifested in your life. Just like Isaac was a promise, not an Ishmael, work of the flesh, The only way that you're ever going to receive God's righteousness is through receiving the promise, not through the works of the law. Ishmael represents the works of the law in this, the illustration he's trying to give here. Isaac was a child of faith. Ishmael was a child of works. Because Abraham and Sarah had to totally depend upon God, because the point in time came when it was impossible for them to do anything to have children. And then God works this miracle and they're able to have children. Isaac was an example of what Paul's trying to get across. And it's like he's pointing them back to Isaac and he's saying, look, do you not understand? I mean, now think about this for a moment. Even Paul didn't understand this for a while. He had this encounter with Jesus on the Damascus Road. Then he has these revelations from Christ. And he's now teaching these things. And it's almost like he's slapping himself in the head and saying, how could I have been so stupid as to not to see these things? And now that I see them, I want all my Jewish brothers and sisters to understand these things. But they keep rejecting the answer. They keep rejecting the very thing that God was pointing us to the whole time. How could we have been so stupid? Sin nature, coupled with man enforcing wrong traditions, that'll do a number on you, big time. And he says, listen, Isaac is our example. He was naturally born of supernatural circumstances. Naturally born of supernatural circumstances. Without divine intervention, Isaac would never have been born. And this is the point he's trying to make here. Divine intervention was brought about because Abraham trusted God. There was no trust, no faith in God to bring about Ishmael. But it took total trust, total faith in God. Because Ishmael, he's born, he's growing. And the day comes when Abraham and Sarah, that's it. It's over. The days of childbearing and production are over. And God says, this is what I've been waiting for. Because I work through me working with you, not through you working with you. In other words, it's not going to be by your effort that my promises are manifested. Otherwise, anybody could do this and receive a manifestation of the ultimate goal, which is redemption mercy. And he says, divine intervention was brought about because Abraham trusted God. The natural or the flesh descendants of Abraham and Isaac are not automatically God's children. See, this is a powerful thing that he's saying here. Because the Jews believed, well, if you're a descendant of Abraham, then you got it made in the shade. And Paul's saying, no. Remember what I wrote to you back over in chapter 2. It's not circumcision of the flesh, it's circumcision of the heart. The natural children, children of the works, are not automatically God's children. Only those who by faith trust God for divine spiritual intervention. What is the divine spiritual intervention? Jesus Christ. You can't earn Jesus through works. You earn Jesus, using that term, you earn Jesus through faith. You put your faith in Him, you receive Him. It's divine intervention. You can't do it on your own. And this is what Paul is trying to do. He's saying the Jews have had all these examples, all these things have happened, and yet they're still trying to earn this righteousness on their own. He says, look to Isaac. Look to him as an example. Not Ishmael. Ishmael is your works. Look to Isaac. It's faith in what God has said, not in what you have done. And he says, if you look in verse 9, he says, for this is the word of promise. At this time will I come, and Sarah shall have a son. God's promise is only fulfilled when God moves. Now think about this. God's promise is only fulfilled when God moves. Now, had God given a promise to Abraham and Sarah? Absolutely. But did that promise get fulfilled before or after God moved? It was after. When all hope was gone. In other words, I can't do this on my own. If God doesn't intervene, I'll never be a recipient of His promise. And a lot of people think, well, you know what? If that's the case, then I might as well just sit back and wait for God to show up. Because if I don't have anything to do in all of this, now hold on. Was Abraham obedient to God? And every time God said do something, Abraham did it. He went here, he went there. Remember? He says pack up and move. I mean, all these things that God tells Abraham to do, he did. He was obedient to God. And the whole time, and at one point, remember when God told Abraham, he says, look, I'm going to give you something you can relate to. Yeah, we've got a covenant, but I want to go beyond this. I want to give you something else to consider. He said, look at the sand on the sea. You see that? Now look at the stars. Okay, can you count the sand? Can you count the stars? Okay, that is what it's going to be like for you. Just trust me. Because if you do, we're headed in the direction of you having offspring. It's going to be innumerable. Not, see, and Abraham's thinking, okay, natural offspring. And somewhere along the line, I think he became convinced that it was more than just natural offspring. I truly believe that Abraham came to the point of understanding there's something greater at work here than just me having a whole bunch of kids running around this planet. And God says, look, this is what it's going to be like. Now, in God's mind and his heart, he's headed toward a spiritual goal. This is what he's after. This is why when Abraham trusted God, God was able to bring his promise into manifestation. And so even when his and Sarah's bodies were no longer capable of producing children, all he had to do was look at the sand. All he had to do was look at the stars and say, look, I don't have a clue how this thing's going to work out. I have no idea how we're going to end up having children. Because, I mean, those days are over. But I see the sand and I see the stars and I've got a promise from God. So God, I'll go where you say, I'll stop where you say, whatever it is, but I know that somehow, some way, you're going to move, and when you do, that promise is going to manifest. And sure enough, it did. He trusted God. Okay, now, how do we activate God's promises? Faith. Faith is what activates God to move in our lives to bring about his promises. How'd you get born again? Faith. The moment, see, God's promise is there, but he couldn't move in your life until you acted in faith in accordance with his promise. And his promise is this: if you'll accept my son Jesus Christ, that will give me the opportunity to move on you and in you to cause you to be born again, to have that old sin nature removed, and then my son's life and my life can be imparted unto you, and you'll be my righteousness. So here I am, there's my promise. You act by faith on my promise, I then can move in your life and bring about a manifestation of that promise. Now, for us, as God is speaking this, by faith, we obey him and we look for the manifestation of his promises, and the birth of Isaac is a type and shadow of the birth of Jesus. In all reality, the birth of Jesus was even greater than the birth of Isaac. Now think about this. God's promise worked a miracle in Abraham's and Sarah's bodies. And Isaac was born. God also made a promise and worked through in a miraculous way Zacharias and Elizabeth's bodies for the birth of John the Baptist. But with Jesus, God made another promise. However, this was what I have called a startling miracle, because there was no Abraham and there was no Zacharias. It was just God. God and Mary. And she conceived and gave birth to Jesus. God's promises are all we need to survive in this life. And I know that's a hard thing sometimes. You know what? Abraham believed, but I'm sure at times he kind of maybe didn't doubt, but wondered, okay, God, when? When, God? When? I'm waiting. Any day now, we can have that son. We can have that boy. We can have that offspring. I can have my heir. The emphasis in all of this is a child being born through a promise of God, and this is what brings about our being born again. The promise of salvation. We put our faith in God, and guess what? We become as what? A little child. So see, Paul's taking them back to this example. He's taking them back and reminding them, or really any of us, but specifically the Jews, he's reminding them about their history and everything that God did for them to bring about his perfect will. And in verse 10, he says, and not only this, but when Rebekah also had conceived by one, even by our father Isaac, for the children. All right, now, hold on just a second. Well, let's read it this way. even by our father Isaac, for the children, being not yet born, neither having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God, according to election, might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth, it was said unto her, the elder shall serve the younger, as it is written, Jacob I have loved, but Esau have I hated. What shall we say then? Is there unrighteousness with God? God forbid. Okay, now do you see in verse 11, that whole verse is in parentheses? Okay, now here's what we're going to do. We're going to read this a little bit differently. We're going to read verses 10, 12, and 13, then verse 11, and then verse 14. Okay, now let's read it like that. And not only this, but when Rebekah also had conceived by one, even by our father Isaac, it was said unto her, the elder shall serve the younger, as it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. For the children, being not yet born, neither having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth. What shall we say then? Is there unrighteousness with God? God forbid. Okay, now let's just look at this for a moment. When he writes this, it almost comes across... Now consider everything we've learned from chapter 1 to chapter 8, okay? When he writes this, these few verses right here, it almost comes across as though there is unrighteousness with God. Does it not? But he addresses that, and he writes it, and then he says, but now wait a minute. What are we going to do? Turn around and say that God's unrighteous? He says, God forbid. All right, now let's look at this love Jacob, hate Esau thing, and try to figure out what in the world is going on. He says, I hated Jacob, or I hated Esau, I loved Jacob. Now first, let's turn to Malachi chapter 1 and see something. Malachi chapter 1. If you aren't nice, I'll turn to Malachi chapter 3 and take up an offering. Malachi chapter 1. Yeah, you're bad. I hear you. Malachi chapter 1. Now look at verse 1. The burden of the word of the Lord to Israel by Malachi. I have loved you, saith the Lord, yet ye say, wherein hast thou loved us? Was not Esau Jacob's brother, saith the Lord? Yet I loved Jacob, and I hated Esau, and laid his mountains and his heritage waste for the dragons of the wilderness. Whereas Edom saith, we are impoverished, but we will return and build the desolate places. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, they shall build, but I will throw down. And they shall call them the border of wickedness, and the people against whom the Lord hath indignation forever. And your eyes shall see, and ye shall say, the Lord will be magnified from the border of Israel. Okay, now, you see here how he talks about Esau, and then in verse 4, all of a sudden, we've got this Edom. All right, now turn back over to Genesis chapter 25. Genesis 25, and let's walk through some verses and see some things. Because this passage can be very confusing, at least at face value. In Genesis chapter 25, beginning in verse 19, and these are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian, of Paddan Aram, the sister to Laban, the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. All right, you remember back in Romans where it talked about, you know, and after, Sarah gave birth, you know, here comes Rebekah. And Rebekah conceived, and then the word came to her about the sons and so forth. Okay, we're going to see this. Rebekah his wife conceived. And in verse 22 it says, and the children struggled together within her, and she said, if it be so, why am I thus? In other words, if these kids are going to be a problem from day one, why am I even pregnant? I mean, that's one way of looking at it. And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb. All right, now stop. When did the Lord begin making this declaration? After she went to him and prayed. You see this? God never said a word to her about those kids until after she went to him. I mean, she could tell some stuff's going on the inside. And any woman that's given birth, she knows that kids wiggle around. And if you've ever given birth to twins, you have double wiggle because you got two kids in there. Well, there's something else going on inside of her beyond what maybe would be normal as far as children, carrying children. And so she goes to the Lord and asks, and the Lord says, all right, I'm going to tell you what's going on. Two nations are in thy womb, and the manner of two people shall be separated from thy bowels. In other words, you've got two people that are going to be so opposite from each other. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over, like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them. And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man, dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau, because he did eat of his venison. But Rebekah loved Jacob. And Jacob sawed pottage, and Esau came from the field, and he was faint. And Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint. Therefore was his name called Edom. Okay? So in Malachi, where it talks about Esau, and then all of a sudden it jumps over to Edom, Edom and Esau are the same person. Now, God was not unrighteous. What we read back over there in Romans, God was not unrighteous in his dealings with Jacob and Esau. Remember what God told Rebekah when she prayed and asked about this? And he said, well, here's the problem. You've got two nations in there and they can't get along. And it started already in the womb. They can't get along. And two manner of people, or two different lifestyles, two ways of living. And that became very obvious. You know, Esau the hunter and Jacob, he stays at home. So God told her ahead of time there were going to be problems. Now, if you begin taking a look at a pattern here, look over in Genesis 26, verse 34. It says, and Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, which were a grief of mind unto Isaac and to Rebekah. In other words, all right, now who are the Hittites? Problem people. Who is Esau? Problem child. And so what does he do? Problem child marries into a problem nation, marries into a problem people. Now look in chapter 27, verse 38. And Esau said unto his father, now you remember this, you have to go back and read all of chapter 27 about how Jacob, you know, passed himself off as Esau and so forth. Well, anyway, in verse 38, Esau said unto his father, because his father had already blessed Jacob. Esau said, hast thou but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. And Isaac his father beheld and said unto him, behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth and the dew of heaven from above. And by thy sword shalt thou live, and shalt serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt have the dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand, then will I slay my brother Jacob. Now let me ask you a question. At first he says this in his heart. You think God heard it? Think God knew what he was thinking? Absolutely. Now look at another passage, Genesis chapter 28, verse 6. When Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padan Aram to take him a wife from thence, and that as he blessed him, he gave him charge, saying, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. And that Jacob obeyed his father and his mother and was gone to Padan Aram. And Esau, seeing that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father, then went Esau unto Ishmael and took unto the wives which he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebajoth, to be his wife. Okay, now what's he doing? This kid's still got issues, does he not? He marries Hittites. Then he comes along and he says, oh, mom and dad don't like Canaanite girls? I'll go get me one. And so he goes over to Ishmael, the child of works, the child of the flesh. And he says, got any women? He said, I got this one over here. I'll take her. He says, you sure you want her? Mom and dad don't like your kind, so I'm going to marry her. Now, parents, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but it's possible some of you might have some children that are marrying Canaanite women, if you know what I'm saying. In other words, doing things that you don't like just because they know you don't like it. But the story doesn't end there. Let's look. In Genesis chapter 36. Genesis 36, verse 1. Now these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. Esau took his wives of the daughters of Canaan, Adah, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, and Aholibamah, the daughter of Anna, the daughter of Zebion, the Hivite. Okay? He keeps tapping into the wrong bloodline. He keeps taking these women that are no good. You say, well, Brother Martin, that's a mean thing to say. Listen, if you go through Scripture, you're going to find all of these ites are no good. Well, the Israelites, they were okay. But the rest of them, there were problems. And we're not going to read, there's so many different passages that we can read in reference to this, but we're not. But over and over again, Israel kept having problems with all these ites. And here you see Esau is marrying into these pagan nations. Okay, jump ahead to Numbers chapter 20. Time has gone by. A lot of people have passed away. But we pick this up in verse 14. Moses sent messengers from Kadesh unto the king of Edom. Thus saith thy brother Israel, thou knowest all the travail that hath befallen us, how our fathers went down into Egypt, and how we have dwelt in Egypt a long time, and the Egyptians vexed us and our fathers. And when we cried out to the Lord, he heard our voice, and sent an angel, and hath brought us forth out of Egypt. And behold, we are in Kadesh, a city in the uttermost part of thy border. Let us pass, I pray thee, through thy country. We will not pass through the fields or through the vineyards, neither will we drink of the water of the wells. We will go by the king's highway. We will not turn to the right hand or turn to the left until we have passed thy borders. In other words, he's saying, listen, we're not going to touch anything. All we want to do is just make a beeline right through here and just be on our way. That's all we want. We're not going to eat your food or drink your water. Just let us pass through. Edom said, who's Edom? Esau. It's his descendants. In other words, the rebellion that was in him has been passed down. Look at this. Thou shalt not pass by me, lest I come out against thee with the sword. And the children of Israel said unto him, look, we'll go by the highway. And if I and my cattle drink of thy water, we'll even pay for it. I will only, without doing anything else, go through on my feet. And he said, thou shalt not go through. And Edom came out against him with much people and with a strong hand. Thus Edom refused to give Israel passage through his border, wherefore Israel turned away from him. Okay, now, look over in 1 Samuel chapter 14. 1 Samuel chapter 14, look in verse 47. Verse 47. So Saul took the kingdom over Israel and fought against, now look at this, how it's worded, and fought against all his enemies on every side, against Moab and against the children of Ammon, Ammonites, and against who? Edom. Edom is considered their enemy. And against the kings of Zobah and against the Philistines and whithersoever he turned himself, he vexed them. Now look in 1 Kings 11. First Kings 11, verse 1. But Solomon loved many strange women. Now, that word strange, it means they don't worship the God of Israel. They might have been strange anyway, but that's what the word strange means. They just don't worship the God of Israel. But Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, look here, Edomites, Zidonians, and Hittites. So now Solomon, you know, he's kind of doing the same thing that Edom did, that Esau did. But here's what's interesting. The Edomites at first saw Esau was not included in this bunch of pagan people. But now, over the years, the attitude of Esau has been passed down to all of his generations, and now they are included with all of the rest of these pagan people. And part of the reason was because of Esau's rebellion marrying into these pagan nations. Okay, now turn back over to Romans chapter 9. He says, the children, before they were even born, they hadn't done anything wrong. Remember what God said to Rebekah? She says, why is this problem going on the inside of me? And God says, because you've got two nations in there. And before they had done anything wrong, we read in here where God makes this declaration, Jacob have I loved and Esau have I hated. Okay, now, it makes it look like when you read this stuff about election and the purpose and so on and so forth, it makes it look like that God made them do this, made Esau to be bad, but he didn't. When God was speaking to Rebekah and what Paul's making reference to here, God knew ahead of time the choices that Esau and Jacob would make. He already knew what they would do. There is a difference. Remember this. There's a difference between predestination and foreknowledge. Predestination is when God predetermines that somebody is going to do something, whether they like it or not. Foreknowledge is when God knows the choices a person is going to make, but he allows them to make those choices because he doesn't violate their free will. So God's up in heaven. Listen, he already knows who on the earth is going to trust him. So he approaches Abraham. He says, I already know what you're going to do, so I'm going to approach you. I already know Mary's going to say, be it unto me according to your word. That's why I'm sending an angel to her. I already know what people are going to do. I already know everything, every decision that anybody is going to make. Just because I know it doesn't mean I predestined them to make those decisions. I knew that Jacob and Esau would do what they did. But just because I knew it didn't mean I'm the one that caused it to happen. God prophesied to Rebekah according to what he knew would happen. Where it says that God hated, back over here in Romans 9, that word hated means detest. Well, it means to hate, but it also means to detest or to abhor. God hated, or he detested, he abhorred Esau because he knew what Esau was going to do. But now notice, God never did anything in the way of judgment to Esau. What I mean by that is this. God already knew ahead of time what he was going to do. Now, let me ask you a question. Don't you think God could have saved Israel a lot of bloodshed, a lot of heartache, a lot of problems, if he had just wiped Esau out or caused him to be stillborn? Think about it. Wouldn't life have been a whole lot easier? He didn't do that. Okay, why not? Because God preordained for Edom to threaten and attack Israel? No. It's because God knew ahead of time what was going to happen, and he's not violating human will. He'll tell you what's going to happen ahead of time, but he's not going to force these things. See, God's never wanted anybody to perish, ever. And he's always made a way for people to draw to him. Esau could have turned to God, could he not? Esau was a child of a covenant child. Esau knew the story of Abraham. He would have understood these things that were, he would have understood the promises and so forth. Esau could have turned to God, but he didn't. And God knows, even when you turn to the book of Revelation, God knows there's going to be a false prophet and an antichrist, but you know what? God would sure rather them accept Jesus as Lord and Savior. God's not making them be the antichrist or the false prophet. They're choosing to follow Satan's path. So God, he lets them know ahead of time. Prophecy is not always a revelation of God's will, but it is sometimes a revelation of what he knows is going to happen. And that's extremely important for us to remember, because a lot of people think of all prophecy as God's will. No, it's not. Just like Rebecca goes to God, she says, Lord, what's the deal? And he says, all right, I'm going to tell you. Here's what's going to happen. You're going to have problem, kids. The elder is going to serve. This one's going to be stronger. I mean, there's going to be a lot of issues here. It's not because I want it to happen. I'm just telling you what's going to happen. I'm God. I know the beginning from the end. And just because I know what's going to happen doesn't mean I'm the one orchestrating it. I would have used Esau if he had turned to me. He knew the words. He knew the promises. He knew the covenant. He knew these things. But he rejected over and over and over again the work that I was trying to do. Well, listen, the one thing we are not going to reject is our break.